This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Iowa, the balloons are coming down. Volunteers are stripping away the banners and placards in church basements and gymnasiums across the state. And with the excitement of last night's caucuses results ebbing, the great stampede of media and candidates is already on its way eastward to the already trampled pastures of New Hampshire. But as the dust settles, there is a new set of questions about the Democratic presidential race. This hour of Talk of the Nation will analyze the first actual results of this election year. A little later on, a look at Congress's to-do list as the Senate and the House of Representatives return to the Capitol, and we'll prepare for tonight's State of the Union address with a history lesson on the proposals that presidents launched in these speeches and their results. But now, what happened in Iowa last night and why? If you attended the caucuses or went to the state to volunteer, call and tell us about the experience. And if you're following the campaign from a state that has still yet to vote, did you change last night how you look at the race? Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office at the Des Moines Register is David Yepsen, political columnist for that paper. And good to have you back on Talk of the Nation, David.
Good to be with you, Neil.
So just like everybody predicted, it was a two-man race.
That's right. Except wrong two men, but...
Well, details. did you see this result coming?
Maybe two or three weeks out, you could see Kerry moving up, but John Edwards was a big surprise. I think Howard Dean's slippage was also a surprise. I think most people did see Dick Gephardt was going to have a tough day here today, yesterday.
In your column this morning, you say Iowans found Dean too angry, too liberal.
Yes.
In what ways?
Well, Governor Dean started off his campaign here and did quite well giving voice to the anger Democrats feel over the war in Iraq. But that has plateaued. That flattened out. Democrats care about other things. They are very angry with President Bush and want to defeat him, and so they study these candidates for on questions of electability. We saw in the entrance polls that were conducted that Democrats were saying the electability thing, it was important to them. They actually looked at candidates on the basis of how will they fare in the Electoral College and how will they fare up against Bush. I think that was one of the things that really worked for John Edwards last night was his perhaps his ability to carry states in the South. So Governor Dean, you know, as the Iraq War faded, he started to plateau and slip, I think, when Saddam Hussein was arrested. Democratic activists had a sense, perhaps, that this campaign was going to be about other issues.
In the which one issue mattered to you most part of the exit poll, people selected the economy, jobs first. 29%, 28% picked health care and Medicare, not unrelated to the economy, and then down to 14% for education and the war in Iraq. So the priorities really did shift.
They did. And I think, too, Governor Dean's style, which was oftentimes on the stump as you played a little bite of that there, mm-hmm. came off as kind of hot. I mean, if anyone saw his statement last night, it was almost angry. The governor does not have a particularly warm stump style. And American voters historically do not elect angry people to the presidency. And I think Iowa Democrats could sense that in feeling perhaps that Governor Dean was too hot. Too angry. It's time to move beyond anger and be about the business of electing a president.
It was interesting, as you look again at the exit poll, on which one candidate quality mattered most to you in deciding how to vote. Cares like people about me, that went overwhelmingly to John Edwards.
Right, and John Edwards has a background not unlike that of many Iowans. Grew up poor. He understands how to campaign in small towns. North Carolina is a fairly rural state, not unlike Iowa. He really did connect with Iowans at the end. This man is a successful trial lawyer, and it was always fascinating to watch him work a small crowd. He wasn't working a crowd. He was working a jury.
We are on takes a strong stand on the issues, and not surprisingly, Howard Dean won on that with 31%. Has the right experience, though. John Kerry, 71%.
John Kerry had a very effective line in his speech that I thought undercut Howard Dean a lot, and that was, don't send a message, send a president. And you could see audiences say, yeah, right, we get it. I mean, since when do we have we go around advertising ourselves for a job and saying we have no experience at it. And Kerry was sort of make the point that maybe this is one time we ought to have a president who knows something about Washington, who knows something about foreign policy, and who, above all, has a combat record that will be very difficult for Republicans to demonize him in the fall campaign. If Senator Kerry is the nominee and wants to raise questions about the war in Iraq, Republicans aren't going to be able to accuse this man of being soft on defense.
Of course, the candidate who finished fourth had a very bitter experience. Richard Gephardt said all along that if he did not win in Iowa, his campaign would be through. And just a couple of moments ago, in his hometown of St. Louis, Missouri, Congressman Dick Gephardt resigned his 2000 presidential run in his home state of Missouri.
Today, my pursuit of the presidency has reached its end. I'm withdrawing as a candidate and returning to private life after a long time in the warm light of public service.
Congressman Dick Gephardt, a former minority leader in the House of Representatives, a long political career apparently coming to an end last night in Iowa. And David, was it you who said that Iowa made him in 1988 and then broke him this time around?
Yeah, and they hated to do it, too. They really came to like Dick Gephardt. He'd been here a lot over the years, cared about issues like they did, came up from a humble background like many Democrats. And it was really very poignant. I mean, he was literally in the same ballroom last night in Iowa giving his concession speech that he was in 1988 when he won. And it was very bittersweet and poignant for many of the people who were there. It was a hard verdict for Iowans to render, but he's had his turn, and they wanted, and again, going with this electability issue, they wanted somebody they thought could win, and they just thought Dick Gephardt was an old face.
It's hard to imagine this is the end of his time in public life, certainly maybe his last run for public office, but after such a long run, it'd be hard to go around anywhere in the Washington, D.C. press corps and find anybody who didn't say, "What a nice man."
Yes, a classy man, a wonderful personal reputation, above reproach. He'll move on in life and continue to make a contribution, I think.
Let's get some listeners involved talking about what happened last night in Iowa. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. We'll begin with Natalie, who was in Iowa City.
Yes, I was at my caucus last night, and I was actually an organizer for Dean just in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end, I was feeling pretty serious misgivings about Howard Dean, and I was talked back into supporting him by some very earnest people here.
Mm-hmm.
But I was discussing the results with my chiropractor, and he put his finger, I think, on Howard Dean's problem. He said, "I like everything I read about Howard Dean except for Howard Dean." And I can't help feeling that way, too. I mean, he had a great organization. He has great stands. And the person I don't feel that way about is John Edwards is a very... He has a lot of really good stance on the issues, and he's a very likable, smooth person. But my one point that I think, the reason why John Kerry did really, really well, and in my caucus, Dean and Kerry tied, and Kucinich came in second after the two who tied for first.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I think John Kerry did so well is because he had an absolutely free ride. Nobody criticized him. Nobody pointed out that we've had Massachusetts Democrats before, and they haven't done very well. And nobody pointed out that he's been in Washington for quite a while and has not distinguished himself especially much as any kind of national leadership position. And nobody pointed anything out negative about John Kerry, and everyone keeps talking about how they went to him because he's electable, and I think that's really questionable. I don't think he's electable at a national level. And I think New Hampshire might show that because they know more about John Kerry than we do in Iowa, and I think they're going to be warier about supporting him.
Interesting to ask you, what was the age group of the people you were getting in as Dean supporters last night?
Our precinct is mixed. We have a dormitory in our precinct, but we also have fairly high-end housing. So we had a busload of kids from the dorm here for Dean, but there were people for college students for other candidates too.
Sure.
But we had older people. We had people who didn't want to move. We had to move around a lot because we were so crowded, and there were people who didn't want to get out of their chairs because it was hard for them to walk. So we seem to have a pretty good mix of age groups. and our caucus.
David Yepsen, I meant to ask you, in the age breakdown on the exit polls, Howard Dean got 25% of those 17 to 29, but John Kerry, 35%. I was surprised by that.
Right, and I think that's an example of this shift that was going on out here, that even some of the younger voters started to move the first-timers away from Dean for some of the very reasons that Natalie has expressed so well here.
Yep.
And we're searching for another candidate. She is absolutely right. John Kerry did get a lot of a free ride out here in terms of his own electability questions. That will be an issue in New Hampshire. She's correct about that. And Dick Gephardt and Howard Dean, these two front runners, started running negative ads against each other and attacking one another, and they wound up hurting, they both hurt each other.
Natalie, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome. Thanks for the show.
Also, as we look at the results from last night, David Yepsen, the labor unions, again, it was Howard Dean and Dick Gephardt who were scrambling for their support, did not turn into much of a factor.
Well, not a good night for organized labor, either in either the Gephardt camp or the Dean camp. Gephardt had 21 international unions. They had 95,000 members in Iowa. Howard Dean had the AFSCME union, which is the most politically sophisticated union in the state, the service employees, the painters union, and they didn't get enough votes. Now, I think it's incorrect to say they didn't produce something, but the fact of the matter is that organizations that we make so much about really aren't that important when you have a turnout that was as large as this one. It was 121,000 people showed up. That was double the turnout that they had 4 years ago. And so the ability of any one interest group to have a huge impact on something like that is minimized. You know, Democrats were self-starters here. They, for a year now, they've had people running up and down this state telling them how important they were. And so these good civic-minded Iowa Democrats said, well, all right, if I'm important, I better pay attention here. And they did, which was why they were undecided for so long. And then on their own volition, wasn't through some organization, they went out on a cold Monday night and passed judgment on these candidates.
Let's get another caller in. This is Albert, who's with us from Newtown, Connecticut.
Yeah, Nate, how you doing?
All right.
I just wanted to make a comment here, whether in the interest of full disclosure, that we don't, you know, the press had a part to play in this, because if you look at the last 3 weeks towards the caucuses, the press beat up so much on Howard Dean, and, you know, that had a part to play. Now, also, how do you explain about Dick Gephardt? This guy is a nice man, decent man, had an excellent organization, but he didn't win. So when you say Dean anger, so what? How do you explain Dick Gephardt's failure to win the caucuses? The other part I wanted to...
Well, let's. We're not going to be lucky to have enough time to get David Yepsen to address both of those questions.
Dick Gephardt did not win because many Iowa Democrats feel that he has had his turn, been there, done that. He's an old face. They think they need to field something fresh. They like the man personally. They like his views on the issues. They simply just didn't think he was electable. In terms of the media ganging up on Howard Dean, you're absolutely correct, Albert. That's the nature of what we do. Someone becomes a front runner in a race, and the white hot lights go on them, and their record gets scrutinized. And sometimes candidates hold up under that. Other times they don't. But that vetting is something that Howard Dean had not been through before, and I'm not sure he handled it all very well. Now that attention will turn to John Kerry and to a lesser extent to John Edwards.
The New York Times noted this morning, it was Todd Purdom who said, in the end, Iowa did what its defenders say it does best. It tested the candidates over many months, first in small settings and then in a media glare, and revealed weaknesses that were not initially clear and strengths that only gradually became apparent. So, David Yepsen, another 4 years, you can get some sleep now.
I hope so.
David Yepsen, a columnist for the Des Moines Register. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
David Yepsen speaking with us from Des Moines, Iowa, about the results of last night's caucuses. And now we're going to look at what to look for in the primaries yet to come. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Michael Duffy of Time Magazine will join us. You can also send us email, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the changed landscape after last night's Iowa caucuses. Where do the Democratic presidential candidates go from here? Will last night's results change which candidates you pay attention to? And what do you think they should learn from the results last night? You're invited to join the discussion at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Michael Duffy, Washington Bureau Chief for Time Magazine. He's with us from Time's offices here in Washington, and good to have you back.
Thanks, Neil.
What do you make of last night's results? What jumps out at you?
Well, two things. You know, George Bush's father once said, he liked to say, that politics is no business for people who don't like surprises. And last night was full of surprises. The thing that I think, you guys covered a lot of ground there in the first segment, the one thing I just add is the real breadth of Kerry's support surprised me, among strong Democrats, weak Democrats, people don't think of themselves as Democrats, you know, among old and young and older, people with all kinds of educational backgrounds, people who'd been to caucuses, people who'd never been to caucuses. It's in almost every category, but those two or three you mentioned of Dean and Edwards in the entrance polls, Kerry emerged as not just the leader, but in some cases the strong leader among people who talked to the interviewers. That's the most surprising to me. It's breadth of his support. Whether that holds up in New Hampshire will be a really important question.
And sometimes things don't hold up in New Hampshire, partly at least it seems because New Hampshireites don't want them to hold up.
Yeah, they seem to want to prove somebody or something wrong.
And they're usually right.
And they usually do a pretty good job. The difference here with Kerry is that they've already kicked his, they've already put him through the ringer once. Most of last year's story of the John Kerry campaign was about people, particularly in New Hampshire, saying, well, we may really not want to buy this. One of the reasons Kerry threw the Hail Mary and moved his campaign to Iowa very late in the game was because he was having trouble gaining any traction in New Hampshire. Now he goes back to this state that I think some Democrats there may feel that they have already taught him a lesson. It'll be interesting to see, because it's kind of a second campaign for him in New Hampshire starting today.
Yeah, but let's talk about logistics just for a moment. As you said, John Kerry threw his entire campaign, everything he had, into Iowa. He now comes up New Hampshire, sure, he's got momentum, but New Hampshire's just a week away. And then after that, the avalanche. Does he have the resources to mount the kind of national campaign to be out there in all of those states? Howard Dean's got the money.
That's what this week is going to show. If he can survive New Hampshire in second place or third, if he can move up to those positions, he will get the money. He has a huge fundraising network. It was one of the most, one of the deepest going into this campaign with lots of folks from lots of different campaigns. They can raise it if he keeps winning. They will have no trouble raising money.
And the other issue, of course, is Kerry as sort of the Democrat who's unassailable on national security issues, as he's got military experience. Well, he now encounters Wesley Clark, who wasn't even on the ballot in Iowa.
Yeah, and I think Natalie, the caller a bit before, made a really good point, which is that he wasn't under the same kind of scrutiny as Howard Dean was, or even Dick Gephardt was in Iowa, and he's going to now come under that scrutiny. And Clark, who's in number two in the polls going into last night, is going to—you can almost count on him to make it a test. In fact, I think last night he said, it's one thing to be a military hero as a junior officer, but I essentially said, but I'm a four-star general. That'll be very interesting to see if that works.
Let's get some more callers in and talk with George, who's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having my call.
Sure.
I'm calling from Phoenix. I'm actually from the tri-state area of Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa. And I was calling to speak to the electability. I don't think, at least for those of us under 30 who have been, I'm a Dean volunteer, one of the big reasons that has sent us going to the Edwards camp and to other camps is that the campaign for Dean doesn't show much fluidity. It's very rigid. They haven't changed. You know, they're very angry. They got us with that. Now be a president. I don't see them doing that. But I'd also just like to say that Howard Dean has done more to save the Democratic Party than any other person in the last 20 or 30 years. And I think whether he wins or loses, it's a great injustice that he probably won't be remembered that way.
And Michael Duffy, I guess not since kids went clean for Gene has the Democratic Party seen such an infusion of young people.
No, and that sounded a little bit like an elegy to me. I'm not sure we're quite ready to write the elegy on Howard Dean. That may be the case in a week. His job this week in New Hampshire will be to hold on, to be above all calm, and hope the air doesn't go out of the campaign.
agree.
George, there was in the newspapers at least some overheard conversation amongst Dean volunteers in Iowa wondering about, should they vote for Ralph Nader or would any of the Democrats be good enough?
I'm sure there's a lot of that sentiment. I think the big reason that John Kerry won in Iowa is that he's sort of the fallback on candidate. I think he's always been the front runner. And I think now that there's some confusion as to the viability of other candidates, John Kerry is just sort of the fallback. Let's go with John Kerry. But I don't think you'll see many Democrats going to Nader this time.
Okay. Thanks very much, George.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Let's talk now with Ann, and Ann is in Bedford, New Hampshire.
Hello.
Hi.
My comment is that I think things are going to be different here in New Hampshire because Leslie Clark is going to be in the race. And an awful lot of people I've spoken to who want anybody but Bush are looking at Leslie Clark as possibly the most electable of all the candidates.
What about the point Michael Duffy was making just a moment ago that, in a sense, people in New Hampshire now will take a second look at Senator Kerry?
You know, the candidates have all been here for 2 years. I think at this point, most people have made up their mind. There's been so much opportunity to find out about them, and we've known about Kerry for a long time. He's a good guy, but for myself, I've come to realize that New Englanders aren't maybe the best candidates in the rest of the country.
The second oblique reference to the Dukakis factor that we've heard today.
Yeah.
But, of course, that could be said about Governor Dean as well.
Exactly. And I, like a lot of people, like Dean on paper. But I think he's going to be a bit of a loose cannon out there. And an awful lot of people here just want to get somebody out there who will play well countrywide.
And Michael Duffy, I guess none of that surprises you.
Well, I think Clark is kind of an unknown catalyst this week. And he bears watching for two reasons. First of all, he typically, up to now, has been very careful not to criticize his rivals. And one of the things that seems to have upended Dean and Gephardt in Iowa is they got very negative. Clark has been shown a lot of reluctance to campaign that way, and that's probably helped him. It'd be interesting to see if he keeps that. The second thing is, and you kind of alluded to it obliquely, Neil, is that he has a lot of money, unlike everyone else except Mr. Dean. Clark's loaded here and can probably go a while, which means how his fortunes may not rise and fall this week either. Again, how many people get their tickets punched out of Iowa was the question yesterday. Now we're all looking at the question, well, how many will survive New Hampshire?
And Anna, how many candidates in your front yard when you woke up this morning?
None today.
You'd think they'll be around. Don't worry.
Well, they all come to Bedford because it's 10 minutes from the airport. But it looks rural.
Okay. Thanks very much, and good luck, Ann.
Certainly. Thank you.
Let's go to JC, and JC's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hello, how are y'all doing today?
All right.
Another beautiful day in the bluegrass here.
Uh-huh.
Well, I know we're talking about the Democrats today and the electability and who might be able to beat George Bush. I'm just curious if there's any kind of disenfranchised type of Republicans out there, if there's any organizations that have made any kind of headway speaking out against any of the problems that they have with the Bush agenda, you know, with the war, the economy, you know, joblessness, you know, that type of thing, foreign relations. I'm just curious if there's anybody out there in the Republican Party that's making any kind of noise that might give him, I know they're not going to have a problem electing him, you know, as far as their candidate's concerned, but anybody that might go with a different type of platform or try to demand that there might be some change in the rigidity of the Bush, the Bush presidency right now.
I didn't mention it with David Yepsen, but of course there were Republican caucuses last night as well, less well attended than the Democrats. But I think President Bush did pretty well, Michael Duffy.
Yes, he did. In fact, I think the short answer to the caller's question is no. We haven't yet seen the Republicans for Kerry movement take off or anyone else. I think the interesting thing that we did see yesterday in Iowa is the extent to which Edwards of North Carolina seemed to do best among people who tend toward the center. He didn't outpoll Kerry, but he was doing very very well in those areas. And a lot of people in the party, particularly in the media, are going to think about how Edwards, whether he can have legs going into the South. which tends to be a more centrist Democratic electorate.
But there's nobody out there that's saying anything about George W.'s agenda or anything?
On the Republican side?
Yes.
No, they have extraordinary party discipline. They have tended their flanks very well, very well. And that's part of, you know, so the lesson he learned from his father, who at this stage in the race, when his father was running for re-election, had a challenge inside his own party.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, JC.
Uh-huh.
As we look ahead, not just to New Hampshire, but to South Carolina, which comes after that, the first race in the southern part of the United States, where a lot of people think a Democratic candidate is going to have to pick off one, two, three states if they're going to have a hope of beating George W. Bush, the campaign begins to take on a different tenor. Senator Edwards' credibility looks a little more solid.
Yeah, absolutely. And while Edwards, I think, has said several times, I have to win in South Carolina. He's from the state. He obviously, that's where he was born, though he's from, he actually lives in North Carolina now. He said this is where he has to win. And I suspect we're going to see a lot of polls this week that reset the clocks there. People will take another look at all of the candidates. And he may be in a stronger position now than he was just a few days ago.
Email question from Brian Miller in Kalamazoo. Does John Edwards' apparent lack of ground forces and monetary donations present a significant hurdle toward success in future primaries and caucuses?
Well, it is a hurdle. On the other hand, everyone was surprised by how he had probably the least sophisticated organization of anyone in Iowa, and yet he came in second, which showed you that, you know, a Dean supporter out there who was organizing for Dean called me over the weekend and said, John Edwards is everyone's second choice, no matter where they are. He's everyone's second choice. And that really, you could see that in the results. He focused on rural counties. He kind of avoided the cities, and yet he did really well in a state where organization is supposed to be everything. Just didn't matter. Shows that in these campaigns, and you've seen it, whether it was with Ross Perot or John McCain, there's someone always catches fire, and the fire doesn't have anything to do with the rules, and perhaps Edwards will be that guy. Probably too early to say just yet, but sometimes even an upstart can overcome those challenges very quickly.
Speaking of too early to say, an email question from Matt in Portland, Oregon. Curious if your guest believes we're also seeing a vice presidential candidate in this bunch. As a Democrat, I think that Kerry Clark or Kerry Edwards sounds like a good ticket to win in 2004.
Well, you can see the makings of a lot of different balancing combinations. When everyone thought Dean was going to be the nominee, you could have paired him with a bunch of folks, and that would have given, you know, geographical and ideological spread. The same thing here with Kerry and Edwards, but we're just too early to be having that conversation, since, you know, this is kind of a winnowing process. New Hampshire may do to this field the same thing that Iowa did to it, shorten it by a body or two. And then you just don't know how it could shape up. So, sure, I've always thought that the tickets come from the fields, but that's often not the case.
And let's get another caller in, and this is Haig, and Haig is in Columbus, South Carolina.
Yes, hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to make a comment relative to the Iowa caucuses that I think they were very successful in weeding out the candidates that were running there and really seeing John Kerry's presidential quality and capability to really be the candidate to bring both all the Democrats behind him and also satisfy some of those moderate Republicans who may swing away from Bush for a more moderate foreign policy that John Kerry could bring to the United States. And also a high degree of experience on John Kerry's part, although he's a somewhat reticent and more reserved individual, which I think is more presidential quality than some of the other candidates. Particularly, you saw that people looking through the man of Dr. Dean as compared to some of his excellent ideas, but as an individual, I think the caucuses in Iowa decided that wasn't their candidate.
Anybody you're leaning to in South Carolina? You're coming up pretty soon.
Well, particularly we're in South Carolina, we are having a primary, but very soon. Okay. But I think that people are looking to New Hampshire now, and I think the momentum that is building up between John Kerry and Wesley Clark is somewhat unfounded, unfounded belief that Mr. Clark is going to be a strong runner. Mr. Wesley Clark does not have any of the national capability as a politician, although he has a strong NATO background. That's highly limited qualifications for President of the United States, and is probably in also the fact that he's in conflict with the Bush administration.
Okay.
Puts him in a precarious middle ground that I don't think is going to carry the weight of John Kerry.
Thanks very much, Haig. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get one more caller in, and this will be Charles, and Charles is with us from Detroit.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks
All right.
for having me on.
Sure.
My comment is regarding the Democratic establishment, which I really think should be held accountable for its deliberate attempt to break down the Dean campaign and the largely grassroots-inspired constituency. I mean, I think the Dean campaign truly invigorated the Democratic Party to bring it back to redefining itself apart from the Republican Party, as opposed to just being Republican light. And as far as electability, selecting Kerry is just all but guaranteeing another loss for the Democratic Party. And I think the sense by true Democrats and liberals is that the party is purposely throwing up another losing candidate from the inner circle of the party under the pretext of supporting an electable candidate.
That sounds a little bitter, Charles.
Well, you know, I'm still looking forward to the results with Clark. I think that he has also a legitimate potential. But I think the myth that you need a Southern candidate to be elected is kind of a farce. I think the real sense of electability is grounded on issues and getting the truth and debate on real issues back in the public forum. And I think that what Dean has been responsible for is getting us all talking again.
Just quickly, though, a candidate and his organization are supposed to be tested in these caucuses and in these primaries. Apparently, at least the first time around, Howard Dean didn't do well.
Well, you know, what's kind of ironic about that is I think that Dean's comment on that on the Iowa caucus system itself, when he was a guest on the Canadian television show called The Editors.
Four years ago, yeah.
Right. We in Detroit actually have the luxury to see that show when it airs. But
he said it was a product of the special interests.
Well, I think he was right on the money because he pointed out that the Iowa caucus system is deeply entrenched by organized party leadership.
He changed his mind, at least in Iowa. Let's get a quick response from Michael Duffy. Did Howard Dean, nobody's writing him off at this point. He's certainly got the most money of any candidate. But quickly, do you think the Democratic establishment brought down Howard Dean?
No, I think it was done by a combination of Howard Dean and Dick Gephardt, and that's only part of the Democratic establishment. But I also think it's, like you say, too early to write the elegy here. He's still supposedly ahead in New Hampshire. He said last night that he's just begun to fight. Of course, they all said that. But we're a long way from being over, and he's a long way with his war chest from being written off.
Michael Duffy, thanks very much for being with us.
You bet, Will.
I hope that cold gets better.
Thank you.
Michael Duffy is the Time Magazine Washington Bureau Chief, and he spoke with us from his office here in Washington, D.C.